This is the voice of the Vortex. Hello. Today is June 14th, 2011. Apologies for missing the last episode. The run-up to Conquest proved to be a bit more complicated than I had expected. Overall, though, I believe that the convention was a success. Tamara Pierce told us about fairy tales, and we argued the merits of Twilight at the Young Adult Literature Tea Party. The charity auction raised thousands of dollars for tornado-ravaged Joplin, Missouri. A great deal of the credit for the success of the charity auction belongs to Paris McBride, who arrived with a truckload of merchandise from her husband's popular new HBO series, A Game of Thrones. Another part of the credit goes to whoever stole Chris McKitterick's favorite shirt, complete with his con badge, and a selection of commemorative pins. He did end up buying it back, but not until after a lively round of bidding. I only got to attend a few panels. One panel posed the question, why is there so much literature about centuries-old male vampires hunting young women, and almost nothing about old female vampires hunting men? They did not address the idea of same-sex vampiric pairings. Right as I was about to leave, one of the panelists finally brought up what I thought was the main point. Up until then, the discussion had been based on the idea that these sort of older vampire with a younger human relationships are somehow okay. She suggested that these sorts of relationships are inherently coercive and abusive, but that our society is okay with that so long as the victim is a woman. Change the roles, and suddenly the power imbalance and the sort of pathetic creepiness of a centuries-old supernatural creature looking for dates in high school becomes really obvious. They asked for examples where the older, immortal woman is in a relationship with a much younger man. The only one I could think of right away was The Morgaine Saga by C.J. Cherry. Morgaine isn't a vampire, but she is old beyond counting. She ends up with a human man in his 20s, but despite temptation, their relationship never becomes sexual. There is an implication, though if I remember right, we never hear it from her, that she isn't interested in a relationship with that kind of power imbalance. She is old, though her face is still young. She has seen horrors beyond his ability to understand, and she wields a power that he can only call sorcery. Would a man in her position have made the same decision? I had to leave the panel early, and so I didn't hear whether or not they came to any kind of conclusion. I have always loved the concept behind the X-Men. I have never been particularly impressed by the media based on that concept, though. The new X-Men movie, First Class, is no exception. Once I was able to see past the young Magneto's, charisma, there just wasn't much movie left. First Class refuses to hide or apologize for the fact that it is a movie based on a comic book. The plot is silly alternate history. What if an evil Nazi mastermind caused the Cuban Missile Crisis and the X-Men had to intervene? President Kennedy gets a cameo, for one thing. Interestingly, First Class doesn't even try to distinguish between a Soviet and a Russian. All the guys in fur hats are Russians. And for some reason, they never subtitled the word political officer. Zanpolit, which I'm probably mispronouncing, is one of the few Russian words that I know. And so when the commander of the Russian warship turns around and addresses, and I apologize for my pronunciation, Tovarich Zanpolit, I was surprised to see the subtitles translate this only as comrade. I think a reoccurring problem with the X-Men movies comes from the impulse to put too many characters into too small of a space. First Class didn't have time to develop the characters of Angel, Darwin, Havoc, and Banshee, in addition to the main characters. So if you didn't already know who these people were, it's really hard to care about them. Beast and Mystique get a bit more development, but only just. Mystique made an interesting foil for Xavier, with her undeniable mutation that nevertheless doesn't give her anywhere near the ability to defend herself that Xavier's far more subtle mutation does. And was anyone else disturbed by the end of the movie, when all the women and minorities had joined forces with the evil Jew? Yes, I know that being a Jew and a Holocaust survivor are part of Magneto's backstory. I don't blame the movie makers, but I don't have to like it. Although, I have to say that Magneto, the Avenging Jew of Doom, was pretty cool. But what an awful choice to be forced to make between a man who has looked into the abyss, who will hunt down and kill the people who wronged him, something that I believe is supposed to make us call Magneto the bad guy, and a child of privilege who doesn't hesitate to invade the minds of bystanders to force them to do his will, regardless of the consequences for them, remember the unfortunate political officer. Our sympathies are supposed to be with the rich white New Englander. I love Magneto's line upon seeing Xavier's childhood mansion. However did you survive? On the way out of the theater, I overheard a man complain that, quote, this movie is just going to make people even more confused about what evolution actually is. He's absolutely right. The science in this movie is unashamedly goofy, with no connection to the world outside of comic books. X-Men First Class is a powerfully stupid movie. It has just enough plot to hang some really exciting action scenes from, if that's all you want from a movie, and that's all I usually want from my movies, then you won't be disappointed. If you can also ignore the blatantly anachronistic weapons, the bad science, and the hover jet. The short lists for the Theodore Sturgeon and the John W. Campbell Memorial Awards have been announced. The Theodore Sturgeon Award is given for the year's best science fiction short story. This year's shortlist includes the Hugo-nominated novellas Troika by Alastair Reynolds and The Maiden Flight of Macaulay's Bellerophon by Elizabeth Hand, as well as The Things by Peter Watts, and, my own personal choice, Flower, Mercy, Needle, Chain by Yoon Ha Lee. The John W. Campbell Memorial Award is given for the year's best science fiction novel. This year's nominees include some shoo-ins, such as Ian MacDonald's The Dervish House and Connie Willis's Nebula Award-winning Blackout All Clear duology. There are also some surprises, such as Zero History by William Gibson, which is a fine book, but only just science fiction, and Ant Hill by Pulitzer Prize-winning entomologist Edward O. Wilson, which I have not read, but based on the reviews, does not seem to be science fiction at all. In 24 years, the Sturgeon Award has gone to a woman 7 times. In 37 years, only 4 women have won the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. Both of these are juried awards. In science news, someone has discovered an alien artifact on Mars. Or not? Let me explain. Once again, someone with way too much time on their hands has found something odd in one of the pictures on Google Earth. Or Google Mars, in this case. The artifact is a white streak, a few pixels long and a few pixels high, sitting on a blurry red background. The white line bends at a right angle, which makes it look like an L-shaped building, but everything at this magnification bends at right angles. The picture doesn't have enough resolution to show anything else. If you take a look at the picture, you can see the edges of the individual pixels. At that magnification, with resolution that poor, it is impossible to say what that white smear is, or even if it exists outside of the computer. Remember, the computers use shortcuts to compress image files that can easily cause distortion and the creation of artifacts. I would not oppose taking a closer look at this artifact, but I am skeptical that we will find anything but Mars rocks. In local news, the Maker's Faire is coming to Kansas City. The Maker's Faire celebrates things people create for themselves, such as technology and electronic gizmos, urban farming and slow-made foods, homemade clothes, quilts, and sculptures. It will be held in Union Station on June 25th and 26th. The Makers Fair is put on by the good people at Make Magazine. I hope to see you there. The Voice of the Vortex is produced under a Creative Commons, Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works, Sharealike 3.0 license. To comment on this episode, drop an email to voiceofthevortex, all one word, @gmail.com. Show notes are available at voiceofthevortex.podbean.com. This is Sarah Frost, the Voice of the Vortex, signing off.